am not in mood tonight to turn the other cheek, but will return attack with compound battery.
Coming to you from the Cinema Lounge of the Carolina Asheville, it's Elitist Bastards Go to the Movies with Kim Hankey,
Bastard number one,
and Justin Sowler.
Hi.
And I'm the producer, Steve Schanefeld.
So let's start off with, Justin, I heard that you saw Johnny English Reborn.
Yeah.
You are not, if memory serves, a fan of Rowan Atkinson.
What makes you say that?
Because last week you made it sound like you hated everything the man has ever done.
I do.
And I believe you referred to Blackadder as just being for nerds.
No, that's kin to that.
I've never
seen Blackadder. I've never seen Blackadder say anything about Blackadder.
Okay. So what did you think of the sequel?
But I would say that it is for nerds, from what I understand. Which is fine. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that.
Well, most of us are nerds. It just depends on what kind.
You weren't excited about this film?
No.
And
I'm still not.
The first one, Blue Goats.
I never saw the first one.
Well, you didn't miss anything.
I saw the two Mr. Bean films that played stateside. Mr. Bean's holiday made me angry, if I remember correct. Because he's such like an asshole.
Well, that is part of the problem, is that Mr. Bean is not even remotely a sympathetic character.
No.
Nor, am I assuming, is...
He's slightly
Johnny English.
More...
English. He wasn't in the first film.
He's more than Mr. Bean, but Mr. Bean's maybe the most detestable person I've ever seen put on film.
That may well be true, but before you completely write Mr. Bean off, see The Christmas Show.
Okay. So the one where he ends up with a turkey on his head?
Yes. Okay. It's also the one where he menaces baby Jesus with dinosaurs.
Okay.
All right, so tell me about Johnny English Reborn. And just to give a synopsis of
it's a James Bond spoof.
Okay.
Which has been done a billion times, but this time you get...
And much better.
Yes. But now you get Rowan Atkinson mugging and falling over things and being an idiot.
Did you not see the picture I sent you to put with that review?
Oh, I saw it.
It was awful. Yeah. It summed the whole thing up. It was like, shoot this man. So and I haven't even seen the goddamn movie.
It's annoying. It's an annoying movie.
Any redeeming qualities? Any performances that you like?
Well, I mean, everybody else is fine in it, but they're still in this dumb movie. Like, Gillian Anderson is depressing.
That ought to be worse. You know.
Dominic West is in it, and it's depressing. It's like, which I'm a big fan of The Wire, but his movie career has been pretty much shit. That Punisher movie he was in. I didn't even realize it at that time who he was, but thinking back on it.
I assume you mean the second one,
yes.
And not the Thomas
yes.
Jane one, which was actually kind of amusing.
No. It's just this, like, reminder of everything that's... These actors, what's shitty about their careers, what's shitty about Rowan Atkinson. It's way too long.
I remember when Gillian Anderson was somebody. I remember when I used to get spam offering to show me her nether regions.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure that's what Google's for now.
Yeah, that's true.
You don't need people sending you these things. You just go, you type in somebody's name and then naked at the end of it.
Yeah. Okay, so short answer to Johnny English Reborn.
It sucks.
Okay, well, let's move on.
What should we move on to?
Well, another film.
You want me to talk about Mighty Max?
Let's save it. Let's save it for...
Are you sure?
He wants a little verisimilitude here.
I do.
This is getting this out of my
system.
Let's
talk about another terrible
film. I saw a bunch of this crap, you know, so I mean...
Saw Paranormal Activity 3.
Paranormal Stupidity 3, you mean.
The subtitle?
No, that's what it should be called. Okay, here it is. It's the same as the last one, except it's leading up to the last one. Like the last one led up to the first one. The whole thing is constructed in a peculiar fashion. What you have is a compendium of bad acting, bad writing, stupid character development, non-existent direction, and occasional loud shit happens to make you jump and keep you from falling asleep. That's it. There is nothing else to this movie.
I
don't give a rat's ass what anybody says.
Are you sure you didn't just see the first Paranormal Activity?
No, this is the same thing all over again.
I want you to
again.
Go back and
this
rewatch
has a
that
better
movie.
No. The first movie is home video footage.
Yes.
Of a demon. This is
except we never see the demon.
Right. So that's the movie you saw. That's the first one. That's why you didn't like this one. Is because you just saw the first one again.
No, it's the same goddamn movie all over again. But this was not the same movie.
I don't understand.
And this does have a bigger payoff.
It does.
Yes, it does have a bigger payoff.
A money shot, if you will.
Yes, a money shot.
Do you
shot.
Finally see the stupid demon?
No! I think he came closer to seeing the demon in the second one.
What I saw in the trailer, they throw water at it or something. You see, like, water for a second.
Well, there's stuff in the trailer, you know, like the... There's a thing in the trailer that has the two little girls looking in the mirror and doing the Bloody Mary or Candyman mm-hmm. thing or whatever it is.
Is that what brings
this
it?
This is not the film.
That'd be funny if that's how they brought this demon was...
By saying Candyman three times? Yeah, it would be.
I'm like, whoops.
That'd get you a large black man with one hand and a bunch of bees, though, which is much more interesting than anything you get in a stupid fucking movie.
So it doesn't sound like you liked it.
I despised this movie.
I want you to watch the first one.
No, once was enough. The novelty value is gone.
No, that's what I'm saying. I'm thinking it's way worse than you remember it being.
It's pretty bad.
It's not good. I mean, but it had a novelty value. That's gone. And it would not have any novelty value on a second view. I would never watch that movie a second time.
I think it is really interesting that in your print review, you actually talked about how this made you miss the days of the Saw movie.
Oh,
thing.
God, I would take a Saw movie any day. Any day. They're professional
what about
looking.
What a human centipede.
It's a different kind of thing.
Yeah, we'll come to that. All right, so let's talk about Love Crime. Because it seems like a film you actually did like.
Yeah, I like Love Crime. It's a clever mystery suspenser. That's main problem is that it takes about an hour to get to the obvious murder that has to happen, which is a little bit too long of a build-up. It's very clever, though. It's very nicely done. I mean, Ludovine Sagnier and Kristin Scott Thomas, I mean, it's kind of hard to get a whole lot better than that as far as the acting is concerned. But it's not going to stick with me.
It's essentially, it sounded a little bit like, what was that movie, Swimming with Sharks?
Well, assuming that I have not seen Swimming with Sharks, I can't tell you. Okay. But essentially what it is it's a woman, Kristin Scott Thomas, who takes advantage of this woman who's working for her by essentially taking all of her credit for everything she does and passing it off as, well, that's teamwork. So that she can make this corporate climb. And then the woman double-crosses her and gets something by herself, and so she becomes a bitter enemy and does everything she can to humiliate her. And then Kristin Scott Thomas, this is not a spoiler, gets murdered, and the girl confesses to the crime, but the girl is ostensibly strung out on drugs at the time, and after she sobers up or gets cleaned out in jail, she decides to say that she did not kill her and sets about to prove it. And it's fairly compelling once it gets to the murder.
Right.
But prior to that, the build-up is a little too slow for my taste.
Ken
likes his love crimes fast.
I like fast love crime.
Well, another film that you saw that has some connections here. It's at least got somewhat set in France. It's got a woman.
It's set in France,
someone.
Shot in Bavaria.
It's got a woman who double crosses someone, and it's probably not as good as it could have been. Although I imagine the action starts a lot faster in The Three Musketeers, Paul W.S. Anderson.
Yeah, the action is definitely faster in The Three Musketeers, which is a movie that is so goddamn goofy that I could not help but kind of like it.
You made it sound really fun in the review.
It is fun, as long as you aren't expecting it to have one single functioning brain cell. One of the things that's really fun about it is watching Mila Jovovich actually try to act. It is an hysterical thing to see.
Well, she is actress Mila Jovovich.
I know. She's never going to live that down with me. Hi, I'm actress Mila Jovovich. Yeah, right. You just lied already.
It's good, though. I mean, do you think that Anderson has kind of found his niche?
No, because it tanked. So he said, it means he's probably not going to be another one, and this is obviously set up for a sequel.
He's already announced they're making another Resident Evil.
Well, they're doing that right now.
Yeah, so he's just going to keep making...
He's going to keep turning out Resident Weasel movies. I mean, there's no percentage in it, although I guess now that he's married to Mila Jovovich, I don't guess we're going to see her private parts again on the screen.
We could see more of them.
We haven't in the
past. How much more do you need to see, though?
I don't really want to see them in the
beginning. They'll put a camera inside of her.
That would be very amusing in some interesting fashion, I'm sure.
So would you recommend people see it, Three Musketeers?
Yeah, as long as you're expecting a piece of entertaining crap.
Out of 5 Musketeers, how many Musketeers do you give this film?
I give this 2.5 Musketeers out of 5.
Okay.
Maybe 3.
Okay. How many 3 Musketeers bars in you?
Now you're just getting silly.
I was really hoping there was going to be some product placement in there for that. But.
You know, that's the thing. It should have had it. This is, it's like I said, you know, they crash on top of a spire on Notre Dame. You know, bring on Quasimodo, for God's sake. You have no credibility already. Take it to the limit, and you would have really had something.
I think he thinks he has talent, is why. he thinks he's like making a real
movie. I am surprised
that
Paul Thomas and Wes Anderson have not sued him to change his name.
Well, I mean, if it came down to
maybe
Zack
they're just
Snyder
maybe it's
or,
them combined, and they're just playing a big joke
what's
on
this?
Everyone.
What's this?
I was gonna say if you had to choose a filmmaker of the two, Zack Snyder or Paul W.S. Anderson.
I've had more fun with Paul W.S. Anderson movies, even though frequently for the wrong reason.
I think that pretty much says it. So let's talk about the Mighty Max. I don't have a transition, so this is the best you're going to get.
Let's hear about the Mighty
Catholics.
Max.
There's Catholics.
There's Catholics. There's women's basketball, which is
women's
America's
basketball
pastime.
And Catholicers.
It takes place during the Nixon administration.
Who is Richelieu of our age?
Yes. And so you get these. It's an uplifting sports movie. It's Hoosiers with heels, I think, is what one person called it. Pretty
close.
Much.
What?
Hoosiers with heels.
Oh, Hoosiers with heels. I thought you said Hooters with heels.
Hooters with heels. It's Hoosiers with Hooters.
Okay, perhaps. I think that better. That's probably a better.
And I mean that. That's exactly what it is. It's every uplifting sports movie. You have Carlo Gugino come into this Catholic school and turn the basketball team around, and they win the championship and
save
the school.
What does she do with them once she's turned them around? Yeah, well.
She saves the school, and everybody, 4 people learn valuable life lessons, as we're told in the epilogue. Only
4?
Well, they go on to show, like, here's what these 4 people did after. This one went to coach of the school.
Did any of the nuns learn valuable life lessons?
No. And the black girl didn't learn anything either, apparently. So,
in other words, nuns and black girls are behind the curve on learning life lessons.
Yes.
Okay.
They didn't make anything of themselves.
Well, I don't know what you expect a nun to make of themselves, heck, really. I mean.
They're sort of a limited.
Yeah, the capacity for advancement here. I mean, I suppose you can become Mother Superior or maybe an abbess, or they don't have things like bishopettes or cardinalettes.
You get a hunchback, perhaps.
Yeah. Think of his most beautiful. No, we won't go into that.
So it's.
You're saying it ain't the devil.
It's AARP approved.
Oh, my.
It is based on a true story. I looked up the woman on Wikipedia.
I think the word you're looking for is inspired by a true story.
Though I guess nobody's going to be watching Mighty Max. It's gone everywhere, isn't it?
Yes, Mighty Max is gone by Friday.
Well, it's one of these things that played at the Heartland Film Festival, which is.
That's an automatic downer right there. That is
family
like,
approved.
Oh my God! Yes, that's like just give me a big bowl of goo now.
Hallmark Channel, and this was two years ago.
No, the Hallmark Channel is more edgy.
So one thing that would never play at that Heartland Film Festival is, I suspect, the Human Centipede 2
full sequence.
What? Tell me about this. It's
what is the full sequence?
I have no idea what that means. But this one is described as 100% medically inaccurate, as opposed to 100% medically accurate.
Which sounds like the most clever part of the film.
It probably is. It's shot in black and white, which I don't know whether that was... I don't know what that was, if that was an art trip or what, but it doesn't really matter. It doesn't keep the film from being the most vile, repellent, disgusting thing I have ever seen in my life. I actually looked away from the screen a couple times because I didn't care to see any more of what was going on. And I'm pretty fucking hardcore when it comes to this type of thing.
Yeah, I was going to say, that sounds like quite an accomplishment.
Yes. I mean, as dares go, it's probably pretty good. But I want to remind everyone, once watched, a thing cannot be unwatched. And you might want to think that way if you want to see this. This is not exactly a sequel in any normal sense of the word, although God knows why you would want a sequel. What this is a film about a guy who is obsessed with the first Human Centipede movie. So he decides to make his own Human Centipede. This guy, rather than hook three people together, mouth to ass, is going to hook together 12 people. However, bear in mind, this man has no medical knowledge whatsoever. So he's going to hook them together with masking tape and a staple gun.
That actually sounds kind of funny. I mean,
and remove
masking
the,
tape.
And,
wouldn't you use duct tape?
Yeah, I think you'd use duct tape.
No, he just uses duct tape for very, very small things.
He
takes their teeth out with a chisel and a hammer. It's incredibly repellent, and of course, because the whole thing in the is that they're sharing this common digestive tract, and they don't really tell you how he manages to hook that part together. We see him cut some tendons in close up. He injects the lead centipede with laxative. I'm not real familiar with injectable laxatives, but there is one for purposes of this movie anyway. And so
what
there
kind of
is.
What laxatives are you familiar with?
The normal ones. And
where's your expertise?
Shut
laxatives?
Up. Which results in the exploding diarrhea scene, which is the one point in the film where spot color is used.
Now, I think the important question is, has Jeremy made a human hanky-peed poster for this?
There is no way. There is nothing to do it with.
Put your heads...
Have you seen the poster?
That's a great idea.
No, you could make a... It's doable. He doesn't have to use the poster. He could just make one.
Yeah.
See, personally, I was really wanting to see your head on Puss in Boots. I really did.
Well, it's no human hanky-peed.
Yeah, well, there won't be one.
So it sounds like this film lacks the one redeeming quality of the first film, which is the over-the-top mad scientist doctor that was the only thing you seem to like.
The only thing about this film that is in its favor at all is it actually is as gross and disgusting as the first film claimed to be. There's large chunks of things stolen from other movies. The whole thing with his mother in the house they live in, and his pet centipede, and his pedophilic doctor with Walt Whitman's beard.
It's from Forrest Gump, right?
are completely ripped off from Eraserhead.
It was a Forrest Gump joke.
It's pretty good.
I didn't hear it.
So it's from Forrest Gump, right?
Yes, it's all ripped off.
That's the ass to mouth is from Forrest Gump.
Oh, the ass to mouth is definitely from Forrest Gump. Actually, I thought Forrest Gump was pretty much ass to ass. But
more repellent than Forrest Gump.
More repellent than Forrest Gump. There you go.
So you didn't like it?
I didn't like it. I don't recommend it. I would caution you against it.
Well, there's some people that...
But there are some people, they are like the Will Rogers thing about some people just naturally understand a thing. Other people can learn about it through reading about it. But then there are those who just have to take a piss on the electric fence to find out.
Well, it's done one thing which is sort of amazing, which is that it's actually grossed you out.
Yes, it did. It was that unpleasant. And bear in mind, I saw this on streaming video at about oh, less than 3 by 5 inches big. I cannot imagine how repellent this is on a big screen.
Presumably more.
Presumably.
But we can't have a hinky challenge if you make it through this film without looking away. Ken will give you some sort of prize.
Box or something.
Yeah.
I would not mind watching it, not watching it, but being watching in a position to watch the audience.
So instead of the Paranormal Activity ads where it's people, that's what they should do with human centipede.
Oh, they have people throwing up, you know. I mean, this should have barf bags, and I don't think it does.
Okay, so let's talk about the film that you were most impressed with this week.
Blackthorn is not only a film that I was more impressed with or most impressed with, it's one of the films I've been most impressed with this year. And I did not expect to be. I did not think that a film about what really happened if Butch Cassidy did not die in that shootout with the Bolivian army was not my idea of something I wanted to see.
Now, we should note that that's actually been a theory that's been floating
for
quite a while.
The film, however, is pure speculation.
Sure.
But the thing is it turns out to be just immensely entertaining, immensely well done, and the most beautifully shot film I've seen all year. And it doesn't really deconstruct the myth so much as it adds to it. It builds on it. The whole premise is that Butch Cassidy has lived to be, I would guess he would be about 61 in 1927. And he decides that he wants to go back to America and see his nephew, or possibly his son, since the whatever design for living he and Etta and the Sundance Kid had, it doesn't make clear how, you know, but it does make clear that nobody's real sure who this kid belongs to. But he wants to go back. And so he sells all his stuff, but before he can head back, he gets ambushed by Eduardo Noriega. And they both lose the horse and the money. And then Noriega sends him off, or takes him off, on this wild chase to find a supposed $50,000 that he theoretically stole from some rich mine owner. And it kind of goes from there. It's almost like another Butch and Sundance story. You do find out what happened to Sundance. You get a lot of the flashbacks at first seem really kind of intrusive to the Butch and Sundance, the early days. But they're ultimately, you need them, because you can't understand where Sam Shepard's Butch Cassidy is coming from without understanding where he came from. And without seeing these flashbacks, that won't happen. It really is, it's remarkably emotionally resonant. And everybody's really good in it. Sam Shepard is great. Noriega is great. Stephen Ray, taking a break, I guess, from Neil Jordan, is terrific in it as a tired and more or less retired Pinkerton man who never did believe that Butch Cassidy was dead. And the young guys, whose names I don't remember, who play young Butch in Sundance are remarkably good. But I mean, it really, I can't recommend this film enough. It really is that good.
Well, it's something that I think you've written about before. I don't remember where, but the fact that you have never considered yourself a fan of Westerns, but you keep seeming to like Westerns.
Yes, you know, I mean, I don't get that, because I do not consider myself a fan of Western, but I think American Outlaws is the only Western that has come out since I've been reviewing that I've given a bad review.
You think it's just they're putting out better, like, since there's not a ton of them?
Maybe.
The quality?
It might be the case. I mean, this is a film, this is kind of misleading, because it's not funny in the same way. But this is a film that, I mean, if you liked True Grit, I can easily see you liking this movie.
Okay, well, let's talk about the upcoming Thursday Horror Picture Show, which is an unusual choice in some ways for people who are used to the typical screenings that you've done. It's not a universal horror film. It's not a classic from the 70s. It's a recent film.
And we've done a couple recent films, but
we're nothing if not flexible.
And it's also Steve, a film that, if I understand,
I have heard that Justin has certain contortionist value, but that's, you know,
not in this old age.
Yeah.
But it's also a film that was never theatrically released, if I understand correctly.
No, it was not. And that is unusual for us. I think this is probably the first time,
well, we've done TV film.
Yeah, I wish I had TV films, but that doesn't count. But well, no, this is a little film called Trick or Treat, which is a portmanteau film, which is very cleverly structured, and it's made to kind of look like an EC comic book. It even has some comic transitions in it. And it's not a great film, but it is a lot of fun. And it's very Halloweenish. It's one of the best things I've seen that is tied to a Halloween theme. There is one segment of it, there's a werewolf story I didn't care much for. But overall, I really did enjoy it. I mean, I'm not going to add it to my personal library or anything, but you know, for every so often, it's a great little picture.
How would you compare it to something like Creepshow, which is a pretty...
I liked it better than Creepshow, but I didn't care for Creepshow that much, so I'm not the best person to ask.
Is it comparable in a lot of ways?
But it didn't strike me as being quite as jokey, even though it is funny.
Next week's Asheville Film Society is, again, and both of these are happening at Carolina Asheville. One is on Thursday at the Star Picture Show, obviously, at 8 o'clock here in the Cinema Lounge. On Tuesday, also in the Cinema Lounge, is the Film Society screening. This one is something near and dear to your heart.
That's right, The Black Camel, which is the oldest known existing Charlie Chan movie. At least as we think of there is...
Well, how many older ones would there be?
Well, there's a silent serial that's lost. There's a version of The Chinese Parrot that's lost. There is a 1929 film in which Chan is reduced to a bit character. It is unfortunately still around.
Yeah.
So there would only be three more. And one of them is around, but you don't want to watch it. But the original Charlie Chan carries on, the first of the Warner Olin films, is missing, as are the three films that follow this one. We do have a Spanish language version of the first one, which it's interesting, but I don't think it's really giving you a really good feel for what the film probably was. It certainly doesn't match the shooting script. But this is This is the one where they spent the bucks. They actually went to Honolulu to shoot some of it. And the 1931 footage of Honolulu by itself is probably worth going to see it for. But then there's also this amazingly good chemistry between Warner Olin as Charlie Chan and Bela Lugosi as Tarnavero, a mystic crystal gazer type who is both a help and a hindrance. It's also only the Charlie Chan films to have a character named Kashimo, who is his Japanese assistant in it. And Kashimo is almost not of this earth in terms of strangeness and imbecility. And he's there mostly to be on the receiving end of Charlie's abuse.
Can you give us an example?
Well, he opens a door and causes something that Charlie is doing to be blown off the table, which puts Charlie into a little tizzy where he bangs on the table with his fists like a spoiled child and calls him a zebra. And Kashimo looks at him and goes, zebra, what you mean? And he goes, sport model jackass.
Sounds like how Ken treats me.
It is very much like that, yeah. You know, I frequently say to Justin, Ken, cut off monkey's tail, but he is still monkey.
So, I mean, he cross-stitched that onto a pillow for me.
So, you know, really, it's a lot of fun, and it's historically significant. It has one of the most gorgeously photographed scenes in any Charlie Chan film, which is the scene where Tarnavero bamboozles or browbeats Sheila Fain into telling him what really happened the night Denny Mayo was killed in Hollywood. It's a lot of fun, and it's a Charlie Chan picture. If you don't know what that is, you probably should find out. And if you do know what it is, this one will be a little bit different for you because it's before the character was exactly fully established, and he's a little bit more outspoken in this one than he is in the later films. So
Ken,
see it.
Ken, before we programmed that, Ken was asking me if we should do a double feature of Charlie Chan films, and I told him I would much rather run one of the documentaries that Ken is interviewed in, but...
Oh, come on. People here would eat that up. These blue hairs, they'd love it. We should ask them. Let's take a straw poll tonight.
We got no straw.
A pumpkin pole.
Yeah, a pumpkin pole, yeah. All right,
let's move on to the upcoming films.
I guess my question is anyone getting Anonymous?
So far as I know, no.
Okay.
Okay, so Anonymous.
Anonymous does not appear to be opening in Asheville this weekend.
And that's too bad.
We are deprived and depraved.
Because I need to know if Shakespeare was a fraud.
And if the person you want to go to for that authority.
The fact is Roland Emmerich. Roland Emmerich,
Did you see his 10 reasons Shakespeare wasn't Shakespeare?
He was too uneducated, and nobody who didn't have a good educational background like royalty could have... What a snob-ass thing to say.
It's what did Dickens grow up in? Like,
not only that, but Kit Marlowe was not from the royalty, nor was Ben Jonson.
The New York Times had a guy who was at some point a Shakespeare. I guess he taught it in college.
He was a Shakespeare?
Shakespearean.
Oh.
Scholar type.
Scholar, yes.
He saw the film... Mm-hmm. And was basically saying how stupid the entire thing is. Talking about, like, there's a good, like, rundown of, like, here's just a few things that are factually inaccurate.
Like, supposed to have been Shakespeare died, like, in 1604?
Yeah, and there were still, like, 9 Shakespeare plays
like
that got...
Like, 10 of the big ones.
Yeah.
Some of the most important ones.
And he was saying that if you had taken a college course on Shakespeare, there's at least... He's like, there's at least 10 things you could see if you paid attention that are wrong. And then that would actually probably be a good quiz for somebody.
Sure.
Okay.
So I kind of want to see it, just see how dumb it is, but we don't know when it's going to come out.
Maybe next week.
Maybe.
So then there's Blackthorn, which we've already talked about.
Blackthorn, which we talked about.
Love Crime.
And Love Crime, which we talked about. And there's In Time,
which comes out.
You want to talk about that, since you're going to go see it?
I guess I can.
Well, why don't you?
Insist. Well, it's Justin Timberlake and the Amanda Seyfried.
And Cillian Murphy.
Yes.
And he's the bad guy.
Yeah. Well, it's mostly Cillian Murphy, I think, that makes it look like, oh, this is my the retreat. I don't know if he's
these days. But at the same time, I mean, let's be honest. At least I did not think that the director's two previous films, Sim 1 and Lord of War, were actually bad.
I remember not liking Lord of War. I didn't think it was awful, but I just... It didn't do it much for me.
I actually kind of liked Sim 1. I'd have to see it again to know whether I still do.
I never saw Gattaca.
And I haven't seen Gattaca.
I haven't seen it. It's okay.
Okay. Well, it's interesting, I think, because it's sort of science fiction with ideas, which seems to be coming back a little bit in film.
It looked a little bit like Logan's Run to me when I watched it. I mean,
apparently it's a little bit too much like something by Harlan Ellison for Harlan Ellison's taste.
But to be fair, he has sued people over some stupid things. He sued James Cameron over Terminator.
Harlan Ellison is quite capable of being a horse's rectum. I know this.
Yeah.
This is a man who has been to horror conventions and charged money to watch him write. Which, actually, if anybody's dumb enough to pay money to watch somebody write, they probably deserve to be fleeced.
But, I mean, this is one of those movies from the trailer. It could either be interesting or it could be awful, and I'm not sure where.
Well, the fact that they haven't shown it to anybody is a little bit worrisome.
Or maybe
and
it's
the fact
so
that
bizarre
they also,
that it's...
Of course, they're going to try and promote it this way. But almost all the stills for this film are of people running. So it's obviously, they're trying to make you believe it's action-packed. And it may well be.
I mean, it could be interesting.
It could be wonderful. I think that's a far-fetched idea, but it might be good.
Speaking of films like that, Puss in Boots also comes out next week.
I have nothing against this. I am perfectly fine with the idea. I don't particularly like the fact that the director's previous film is Shrek the Third. But I think it's 7 years too late. You know, when Antonio Banderas as Puss in Boots was a hot commodity right after Shrek 2, and they talked about doing this film, that's when they should have done it. However, I will say that the early reviews are starting to be by people that I don't think smell from the goat. And they're still pretty good. So... maybe this is going to be a pleasant surprise. Pleasant surprise, however, does not mean it's going to, you know, break down the box office. I mean, Paranormal Activity was a piece of shit, and it broke down the box office.
Are you saying it won't knock the boots off your puss?
You leave my puss out of this.
Okay, and then that brings us to the final film that's coming out next week, which you are very enthusiastic about.
The Rum Diary, yes. I'm enthusiastic. I know very little about it, but I'm mostly enthusiastic because it is marks the return of Bruce Robinson, who made Withnell and I, and who made How to Get Ahead in Advertising, and who has not made a film since 1992. And Johnny Depp is the one who went and talked him into coming and directing another film. So he wrote the screenplay based on the Hunter S. Thompson novel and directed it. And I am jazzed, which means I am probably built up to a huge letdown.